Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, Cuomo versus corruption in New York State.
And the higher the rate of trust by the public, the more ability government has to perform.
We will follow up on Governor Cuomo's unexpected call for the show yesterday, predicting a uniquely close relationship with Mayor-elect de Blasio and calling for reforms to wipe out corruption in Albany. We will look today at the tug of war between Russia and the West over trade with Ukraine, why not just money but the future of democracy hangs in the balance. Mayor-elect de Blasio has an announcement scheduled for 11 o'clock. We will see if it's his first big appointment. Many people are saying this is going to be his police commissioner announcement, so we will cover that during the show today. We'll refrain from talking about the Yankees getting Jacoby Ellsbury from the Red Sox. I will just say, good thing the bearded center fielder doesn't mind the Yankees' stupid no-face hair policy. What century is this? And is Jeff Bezos serious about Amazon delivering by drone?
This thing can't land on somebody's head while they're walking around their neighborhood.
That's not good.
That's not good.
No, Bezos on 60 Minutes. Or is he just getting everybody to talk about him again in time for Cyber Monday week? We'll try to figure it out with the author of a book about Jeff Bezos today. But we want to begin with a call-in on something really serious. The place of politics in your life if you have a normal, healthy brain. And whether your faith in politics to bring hope and change brings you disillusionment instead. David Brooks' column yesterday posed these questions in the New York Times, challenging food for thought, both for progressives and conservatives, I think, in different ways. And I thought some of you might like to discuss this. He asked, quote, how much emotional and psychic space should politics take up in a normal, healthy brain? That's the way he put the question in the Times. So what do you think the answer to that question is? Or what is the answer for you? And how do you compare to other people you know in terms of how much emotional and psychic space politics takes up in your brain? 212-433-WNYC. And is that normal and healthy? Brooks' take is basically, and this is really his challenge for progressives, is that too much faith in politics to bring transformational change leads to disillusionment and therefore to cynicism about government in general. And I wonder if this is true for you. 212-433-WNYC. In the column yesterday, he wrote, quote, there are those who form their identity around politics and look to it to complete their natures. These over-politicized people come in two forms, the aspirational and the tribal. I think he means, in a way, the progressive and the conservative, but he didn't put it that way. The aspirational hope, he says, that politics can transform society and provide meaning. They were inspired by the lofty rhetoric of John F. Kennedy's inaugural address. The possibilities, he argued, Kennedy argued, were limitless. Quote, man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty. What a thing for a president to say, to set up expectations in his inaugural address, right? So Brooks continues, the problem with this lofty rhetoric is that politics can rarely deliver. So there is a cynical backlash when the limited realities of government reassert themselves. This inevitable letdown is happening to a lot of President Obama supporters right now, adds Brooks. So how much do you agree with him on that piece? Maybe the most interesting argument is that liberal hope in the power of government to transform society for the better inevitably leads to disillusionment and cynicism because government can't actually succeed at that. Have you had this experience during the Obama years? If you're if you got into the hope and change mentality in 2008, 212-433-9692. And if you're old enough, did you have that disillusionment after Kennedy built up your faith in government, your hopes for transformational change at the hands of government? 212-433-9692. And how much emotional and psychic space should politics take up in a normal, healthy brain? 212-433-9692. Before we go to your calls, which are coming in and our board is full, one reason the column yesterday really caught my eye, and I want you to bring it onto the air, is that I happened to catch Brooks make part of this argument on All Things Considered on the anniversary of the JFK assassination on November 22nd. And with all the hype, with all the love and reverence and putting JFK on a pedestal that so many people did, and deservedly so, you know, in large part, everybody was talking about Kennedy's legacy in glowing terms. And Brooks was the only one who I heard who really posed this challenging thought, whether I agree with it or not. So I'm going to play that clip of David Brooks on the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination on All Things Considered.
I just think he made politics too utopian and led to a complete disillusionment. His inaugural address was a very utopian address: to pay any price, bear any burden, to end disease. And the charisma of his office and then the martyrology of his death really created this atmosphere for a lot of people that politics was not only sort of a negotiation of interest, it was could deliver them personal meaning. It could create a religion of Camelot, which was sort of a Christ-like religion for people who read Vanity Fair. And once it turned out that politics couldn't do all these things, then you had this huge disillusionment fall in. So I do think the whole Camelot thing had a perverse and very negative and disillusioning effect.
David Brooks on All Things Considered, November 22nd. Mike in Crown Heights on WNYC right now. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call. I, as an African American and having lived in New York City all my life, more than 60 years, I'm very concerned with politics because I've come to understand that it greatly affects myself and my community, particularly state politics. I'll give one example that has impacted New York City and has been stirred up in the tabloids constantly, which is education. My youngest son was a senior in 2002 in high school, the same year that brand new Mayor Bloomberg was trying to get mayoral control of the then Board of Education. That was also coterminous his entire time in school with the CFE case, the campaign for fiscal equity.
Right, trying to get more funding from the state for New York City schools.
So now on a day when my son was receiving a scholarship in 100 Black Men and was being feted by the mayor at the court directly behind City Hall, that was the day that then-Governor Pataki's attempt to have the ruling overturned was successful. So then-Mayor Bloomberg never said a word that day, that week, that month, right, or ever, because he was busy wrangling with the state, trying to get control of the then Department of Education.
Mike, I'm gonna stop the story there, but I think I get your main point, which is that politics, and I think you said as a minority in New York City, and a father, affects you very personally.
It has. And so let me
read another thing that Brooks wrote in the column to kind of set up this argument that he was making, which I think acknowledges your situation a little bit. He wrote, as the columnist Michael Gerson has put it, this sort of cynicism is the luxury of privileged people. If you live in a functioning society, you say politicians are just a bunch of crooks. But if you live in a place without rule of law, where a walk down a nighttime street can be terrifying, where tribalism leads to murder, you know that politics is a tribal concern. So you're not talking about murder, but you're talking about growing up in the situation that you did, that your son did, that politics really, really affects you. It's not just a spectator sport.
No, it's not a spectator sport. And I felt that the original statement that you read by Brooks was very plutocratic. I mean, he basically excuses the fact that from his position, his vantage point, he can be oblivious to what's happening. But for other people who are not living at his economic level, that is not true. And this is the blindness that basically pervades everything that goes on. It's almost like let them eat cake is back in style.
Mike, I really appreciate you starting us off on this. Thank you so much. And Reggie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Reggie.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good.
The point I wanted to make was that I really think that politics should not occupy too much of your brain. It should occupy some part of it, because all politics affects, like, you know, us at a grand societal level. It affects us in ways that, you know, and how laws affect society. But really, people should be more concerned with bettering themselves and providing for their loved ones and people that they care for. That's what I really think should be occupying people's spaces in their brain.
What do you think about the last caller's statement, if you got to hear him, that growing up black in Brooklyn and with kids who are, you know, at the mercy in a way of how good the education system is, he didn't have the luxury not to be concerned with politics that much. Do you
that
relate?
He doesn't have the luxury to be concerned with politics?
No, the previous caller, that he doesn't have the luxury not to be concerned with politics so much because politics so influences the quality of life for him and his family and the society.
Okay, yeah, I understand. Like, in his situation, I definitely understand how he should be concerned with it because it does directly affect, the ways some certain laws are interpreted, or the way that, if he needs more police in his neighborhood or something like that, I guess those kind of politics affect him directly. But I was thinking more on, like, a national level of politics. Federal politics, basically, is what I was talking about when I was making my statement.
Okay. Reggie, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Linda in Lake Success. You're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Yes. Hi, Brian. This is an honor. I called because I read Brett David Brooks' article also, and I've always been passionately political and with liberal tendencies. But I did find it was taking up too much of my brain and impacting me emotionally, and particularly the Supreme Court. And I sort of decided, I'm 61 now, that I have to look at it as cycle, that I have belief in our country surviving and that I may not like the cycle we're in now, but there are cycles, and that my hope is, even if it's not in my lifetime, but in my grandchildren's lifetime, that those cycles will change. So it doesn't remove me from politics, and I can discuss things. Other people in my family are passionate. But it's helped me come to peace with some of the things that go on in this country that upset me.
So is that disillusionment with government, government's ability to bring transformational change, as Brooks was putting it, or is that for you still a hope that that could be the case, but just a burnout in spending so much time thinking about every battle?
I think it's the second. I'm not completely disillusioned. I understand how hard it is for organizations to change, and I appreciated the part of David Brooks' article saying when you go on a picnic, you don't appreciate who took care of the park and the roads to get there, and you know that the picnic tables are there and the barbecues are there, and that's government. So that's why I'm not completely disillusioned. I think government works better in many ways than a lot of people would admit. So it's not disillusion. For me, it was a little bit of burnout because I would be so frustrated.
Linda, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. Howard in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that in the short run, David Brooks is right, that if we invest too much of our time and energy into government, looking in the short run, that we can become cynical because in the short run, it can't solve all our problems. But if we take a historical view, the government and politics of this country have laid the foundation for an incredible society that has not been possible through the rest of known human history. And so I think in the long run, we can celebrate government and we can have great faith in it. In the short run, perhaps we shouldn't invest too much time and energy.
I was thinking some similar thoughts that, and I would love to, the next time he's on, ask David Brooks about this. If he dismissed the big historical picture too much, obviously things happen in the short run that maybe don't come out as change-oriented as people hope that they will. But people who revere this country say, look at the foundation, the kind of moral and what's the other word I'm looking for? Well, let's just say the kind of the politically moral foundation of a self-governing democracy, of a republic, the way it was established, the way people think about our Bill of Rights as such a transformational thing in the sweep of history. And that was people coming together to form a government to improve the quality of people's lives in that respect. And then
absolutely. And if you don't take that morality and express it in some kind of political framework, it can become tyranny. But the genius of our founders was to take that morality and put it in a political framework that allows for freedom and allows people to express themselves and for us to help one another, not for one group to use its morality to beat down another group.
And then you could say it was government that brought about freedom for the slaves, when if it was all just left to the market, the institution of slavery would have continued. Now, of course, government enshrined the institution of slavery in the original Constitution, but it was government that limited it and then government that ended it, whereas the market was just allowing it to happen.
Well, and that's the blessing of an evolving government, and one that does operate in the short term for ultimate long-term gain.
Thank you for your call, Howard. Lisa in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I don't think we have the luxury of being disillusioned, and I agree with one of your earlier callers, especially when you're black in this country or this world. You have politics affects you every day. So, yeah, it's going to occupy your mind and your time because it matters. For folks who are making it and surviving or still doing well regardless of the politics, no matter how much they don't like it, which is usually like a lot of liberal whites, they can go, oh, well, you know, I'm disillusioned. I don't want to participate. And sometimes it's almost designed for us to do that. If you listen to the news, you know, they give you all these different sides. And you throw your hands up in the air. One day it's good to have wine. One day it's not good to have wine. One day it's good to have coffee. So you throw your hands up in the air and say, oh, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. And you don't participate. But you have to stay really vigilant and pay close attention. And when politics doesn't succeed, like whatever Obama didn't get to succeed, Obama was just a president who would be open to what the people wanted. So whatever he didn't succeed, we need to look at ourselves and say, we didn't fight hard enough to make it happen. Everybody elected him and then sat down and said, okay, make it happen. But the other machine is far greater and far more powerful than it's not going to just happen that way. We have to fight. Everything is a fight and it's a struggle.
And it's interesting that you bring up the attempt by some conservatives to have programs fail so that people will be disillusioned by government, since the conservative project is less government.
Absolutely. It's only less. They only preach less government when it's good for them. But as soon as they want something, they will government it out of the heck. Like, you know, abortion. They are putting all kinds of laws and using all kinds of governments and stuff to make sure that abortion is illegal. So they only profess no government when it's to their benefit. That's a farce.
Lisa, thank you for your call. And I wonder, too, on the conservative side, if conservatives believe mostly in small government and in not looking to government for solutions to things, what motivates conservatives to become politically obsessed, as Brooks poses the question to all sides, what's the normal healthy brain ratio of politics to other things? How about for people who don't believe that politics is transformational or should be, and spend so much time watching Fox News or running for office as a conservative Republican? How do those two things go together? Gary in Queens are on WNYC. Hi, Gary.
I guess you identified me correctly. Look, government made slavery legal. Government is making slavery today legal by reducing choices, by enforcing conformity, uniformity through coercion, and liberals are beginning to notice.
Well, let's not conflate slavery with whatever coercion you're talking about.
I'm doing it very lightly because of the analogy you made. But look at this. They could have, if a private company lies to you, you can sue them. You can't sue Obama. You can't sue the federal government. So I think.
But I could turn that around and say, if a private company lies to them, it's such a high hurdle for an individual citizen to try to sue a corporation. But we have the power to vote out our elected officials or the party that's in power in the next go-round.
It takes it's a long effort, number one, but usually it's many people and interests will sue, so you're not going to be alone, number one. But also, Andy McCarthy in National Review Online wrote an article that like a precursor to what Brooks wrote about, because he observed that it's being played out as a soap opera politics, how Obama is going to get out of this, just like the marvel that how Clinton lied his way out of things. But real people are being affected. And I don't think conservatives, while Republicans in office now, are not conservative enough to really try to dismantle. They're very pro-government right now. So they're not looking to sabotage anything.
So why do you, as a conservative, focus a lot of your energy, if you do, on political thinking if, in fact, you don't think government has the potential to be transformative for the good? Why don't you just concern yourself with other things? Is it that you feel that liberal politics is such a threat that kind of the equal and opposite holds true, that you have to get into politics because otherwise politics will threaten your well-being?
We're seeing that happen now. The framers were concerned about the tyranny of the majority, but also the tyranny of the king. And we see that now where investment government investment in things chases away private investment, and that investment creates wealth. Liberals don't understand that wealth creation creates jobs. You don't try to create jobs. It's a one-to-one relationship when you throw money at a government and they hire a police officer.
Well, economists will certainly.
Is necessary, but it doesn't expand the economy. The only way to do that is through wealth creation, when jobs create something and people buy it.
Well, of course, economists will disagree on whether government spending really crowds out private sector growth or whether it encourages it through stimulus. And I don't want to get into that economic back and forth. I acknowledge that there are both sides of that, but real briefly.
Give you a good example where government crowds out private investment. Am I on the line?
Yes.
Okay. I can give you Solyndra, I can give you all kinds of things, but let's say you own a restaurant, okay? You invested all your money into it, private investment. And across the street, the government, there's a restaurant across the street that the government prefers. Just like Solyndra, they preferred a certain kind of technology.
Well, and Solyndra, I'm sorry to keep inserting here, but you know, Solyndra is one company that the government invested in that went down. The solar energy sector, the renewable energy sector, in general, is not Solyndra. There have been many success stories, and there is a national project that is funded to some degree by government to try to plant seeds in the renewable energy business to help grow the economy. So I'm just acknowledging that there are other sides to this. But Gary, go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, good. All right. Okay, so the private investor, he has limited funds. The other guy who's getting government funds, he can hire more people. He can, you know, expand right. his menu. He can, because his investment, his government subsidy is fueling that.
Well, there are not government investments in restaurants competing with other restaurants. And I think the oil companies, despite the competition from Solyndra and the like, are doing just fine. But Gary, I'll give you the last word in any case. And how would you answer David Brooks' fundamental question here? How much emotional and psychic space should politics take up in the normal, healthy brain? Do you have an answer to that?
Much? Look, I don't know how to answer that question because, you know, conservatives have one point of view. Liberals see it as government, as savior, and it should be just a traffic cop. It should be, it has a function. It has the function of adjudicating through the court, for example, enforcing the law, enforcing court action, things like that. But when it becomes a player, then it doesn't make the landscape even.
Gary, I'm going to leave it there, and I appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate everybody who called on this. You can keep this going online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And coming up next, we will follow up on Governor Cuomo's unexpected call to the show yesterday. in which he predicted a uniquely close relationship with Mayor-elect de Blasio and called for reforms to wipe out corruption in Albany. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.